7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 12 of Color of Magic. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and as always, riding shotgun is my main man, Brian Allen. How you doing, dude?
Hello, hello. How's everybody doing out there?
Man, are you prepared? This is our last episode before Christmas.
Oh my God. Yeah, I actually did some shopping today. You got all your Christmas shopping done? Got any of your Christmas shopping done?
Yeah, I actually got most of it done. I don't have anything really wrapped yet.
I hate people like you.
Well, like, my problem is I have some stuff here, but, like, I have to rearrange this room that I kind of keep as my office recording streaming space because we're going to have somebody visiting for the holidays, so I got to flip-flop some stuff. So that's kind of putting some things on hold, so I'm going to knock that out, actually, after we're done recording this.
I knew you would because you're so organized in every other aspect of your life, or at least the ones that I'm involved in. I figured, yeah, if there's anybody who's going to have most of their Christmas stuff done, it's probably Daquan.
See, that's a compliment to how well I can fake it till I make it. But yeah, man, it's been cool. So for those of you who don't know, I think I mentioned it last episode, but just got done with this really cool stream with the people over at the cookout. There was five of us on there talking about charities and how they can engage more POC and minority communities. And it was really awesome. We ended up on the front page of Twitch. We topped out at almost 1,700 viewers. And I think we averaged about 1,600 for the majority of it. We went about 3 hours. Tons of engagement. I'm sure some of you have new listeners now because you came over for...
Those are insane numbers, by the way.
Yeah. So, you know, from that stream, we got a bunch of people that followed over on Twitter. We got a bunch of people following my stream now. It was very active. There were a lot of questions, a lot of good feedback, and it's something we're going to look at doing again in the future. If you want to check it out, you can go to twitch.tv/thecookout, and it'll be up there in their videos. Like I said, it's a long stream. It's 3 hours. But if you just want something to play in the background while you're doing some housework or some homework or something or whatever, it's a really good listen. And we cover everything from just social issues to money issues to, you know, how people can be supportive in different communities, how they can reach out and get these people to be good promoters for their charities. Just there were so many topics we covered, like in everybody's backgrounds that were involved were all very good too. So you got several different perspectives that were awesome.
I listened to it. It was really good. Can't recommend it highly enough, especially if you like the kind of stuff that we're doing here. I think you're gonna love it.
Yeah, so exactly. I think if you're into this, there's no reason at all you shouldn't appreciate the effort of what went on there. But let's get down to business. What did you learn last week, my friend?
Well, as I mentioned last week, you know, we were talking about Ebony Jet Magazine and, you know, how integral that was to our childhood. And so I decided to look into, like, what's going on with that. And apparently Johnson Publishing Company went Chapter 7 in 2016. They sold it to a private equity firm. I think once I say private equity firm, you probably know where it's going from there. So, yeah, the magazine apparently is not still being done, but thankfully they do still have a website, ebony.com, where they are still putting up content. So, in some form, Ebony/Jet Magazine does still exist.
Yeah, so as far as what I learned last week, it was really kind of something that we knew, and it was something I started researching because of this charity stream. And it was kind of sad because I had mentioned it before, even on the show, that there are conventions that try to be more diverse, yet they have no real diversity in their leadership, which causes part of the problem.
Yeah.
But it actually turns out that that's the same thing in the video game world and possibly a little bit worse. Like, I thought the tabletop industry might be behind, but no, that is not necessarily the case, actually, as it turns out. So that was kind of sad. Very, very sad. So I'm glad I got to participate in a thing to help make that situation better.
as was discussed on you guys' podcast, we just got a black woman in Overwatch, and I think we're on character number 30 something. So it's crazy to me.
Yeah, and
we got a literal hamster before we got a black woman.
That is,
let that roll around in your head for a minute.
Now, I will tell you what's cool is this morning, actually, I saw where somebody had shared a couple of posts because people were mad about this, as it turns out. But the latest game version of Battletech was released, and they have a for real just regular black character in a story-driven position. He has a normal name, just like, dude, it's not like tropey at all. It was awesome.
It's not Sergeant Lincoln Osiris.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it seems like Darius something regular, right? Like, super awesome. They also, when you go to generate your characters, give you the choice of pronouns for your gender.
It's also awesome.
So you can be he, she, or they. And I was like, man, this is cool. Of course, there's a bunch of people that hated it. But I was just thinking, man, that almost makes me want to just download and stream Battletech for a couple of days just because, absolutely, like, to reward the effort. And I think maybe that's what some of these games, and not just video games, but paper games as well. You know, we've talked about this before with Magic, where just having that representation gets a whole group interested to look at your product. And this was exactly, I haven't even considered playing Battletech in a couple of years, easy, of any variety, whether it's miniatures, card games, whatever, role-playing games. But I saw this and I was like, you know what? Like, I'm not even that into Battletech right now, but I might still do that just to like, hey, here's my $20. Let me go stream it for a couple of days. Cool. Like, get you some exposure just for this.
And by the way, if you like strategy games, I've heard, you know, very good reviews on it. If you just want to buy it, just, hey, because you like bashing big robots into each other, and oh, don't we all?
Yeah, for sure.
Let me tell you, when I wrote for Technology Tale Network, I would do, you know, something like, kind of like, you know, hey, the best black characters that were created in video games this year. And man, it was often a struggle.
Oh, dude, you probably had like two real contenders, and then you had like one or two that were there for a couple of cutscenes, and then one or two that got mentioned.
Like, let me talk about Marcus Cole from Gears of War for the sixth year in a row.
Yeah, that's pretty pitiful, man.
We decided Lee Everett from Walking Dead is, I think, probably, if not the best black person in a game ever. And, of course, the Walking Dead games are so depressing.
But this is why we do what we do. Whether it's us doing this podcast or others, you know, like we said, with like the cookout doing their thing. It's to help this whole situation that's all sideways and upside down. Also, Magic news. You know, we've been talking about it, and we knew it was coming. Yep, there it is.
Yep. Hammer time.
Yep. It was about time, though. Oko finally got booted out of Pioneer. Along with Nexus of Fate, by the way. So we got a twofer this week.
So Oko just in, I guess it's just Legacy now?
Or? Yeah, I guess so. Legacy and Vintage. Okay. But really, this says a lot, right? Like, this card was so strong that it just warped just about everything. And even then, there's people that are arguing that it's still a really strong card in Legacy and Vintage. And
it's frightening. Can you think about all the busted stuff available in Legacy and Vintage?
And if you think about it, really, this is a good example of how sometimes just the simplest thing can be the difference between balance and unbalance on a card, right? If he costs one more mana, or his middle ability is a minus one or two, or maybe even he starts with one less loyalty or something to make it easier to attack and kill it. Like, any of those things changing could have been the difference between this card being strong but reasonable versus just being outright busted. And I think that's the part of design a lot of people don't understand, is they're like, oh, I can make a card, I could do this thing, or I could make this character that does this. But it's like, man, sometimes the littlest thing is the difference in a card, or not even just a card, just an item destroying a game or being the thing everybody loves. I'm sure you encounter that a ton with all the different video games that you're playing.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. And like, it could be just a little thing, you know, a cost or a game mechanic that works in a way that nobody. And the same thing happens, you know, with video games where, oh, this seems fine when it was just all the people at XY developer testing it in house. It was fine. Then you get a million people or more playtesting it, and it works the way nobody thought it was going to work.
Yep. Also, Dexus of Fate getting the boot. I don't mind this one at all. Mostly because, for me, it kind of comes down to the card just not creating fun play interaction, right? Like, the games where somebody starts going off with Dexus of Fate, they're just boring to sit across the table from. They're boring to watch. They're bad for coverage. Like, it's the type of card I just don't think needs to exist. And I don't mind that they tried it once to say, like, what's the craziest time walkie card we could make? We've seen it. We've lived through it. All right. This is the type of card we should never make again. Done. That's just, as far as I'm concerned, I would just ban Nexus of Fate from the game of Magic. I say that. It's probably fine in very older formats because they're just better time walk cards. But yeah, I'm not about it. I'm glad that one's gone too.
And it's always interesting to read, you know, the design afterwards, where this is where the designer talks about, okay, this is what we were trying to do. Like, I read one of the diaries about Once Upon a Time, where they really, because of the fairy tale theme, they wanted a card that worked when it was the first thing that happened. Because how do all stories start? Once Upon a Time. So thematically, it was a great thing to go for. It just, you know.
But even then,
did a little too much.
I feel like that card could have also been something else. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe it costs one, but if you cast it on the first turn of the game and you look at your top X, you could keep up to two lands or something in your hand. Or, you know, just the fact that it was free was what was just so wild about that card.
Yeah.
Oh, and the other thing, too, now we're talking about bannings, actually. We actually got an interesting thing announced that I guess we're not going to have normally scheduled bannings now. They're just kind of going to happen when they need to happen.
They're just going to sneak up on you, like the RKO. It's just, the bannings will come from nowhere.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, this is one of those places it's hard to really decide how I feel about it, because part of it is this whole thing where, if you listen to the community, they kind of want Wizards to be reactive whenever things start getting crazy to be able to act quickly and deal with something. But then Wizards like, okay, fine, we want to give ourselves the flexibility to do this. And then immediately everybody's like, yeah, but then I can't plan to build a deck or know when a card may or may not be banned, and this is bad. And it's kind of like, well, yeah, that's why the other thing existed the way it was.
Yeah.
So I don't really know, man. Like, this is a wild time that we're dealing with.
I think you'll still know, because out of all the cards, and there's been the Ban Hammer had to turn to a pneumatic drill. How many cards have been hit in the past 2 months where we said, oh, that I just had no idea that was coming? You know when the Ban Hammer is hovering. There's reasons for it.
That's an interesting perspective, because I have thought that way in the past, that anytime a card's been banned, I don't think I ever thought just like, oh, wow, that's a surprise. You know, it's kind of yeah, we sort of thought that was coming. Like, nothing really comes out of left field. So I've just never invested in those cards heavily, because I sort of knew that this was a reasonable, like, better than 70% chance something was going to happen to this card. Except for maybe Deathrite Shaman, though I knew that was really strong. I knew there was a chance something could happen there, but it hung around for a while long enough that I almost believed nothing was going to happen to it before it hit a list.
So it happens with so many things that turned out to be bad or problematic. It's been around so long, we figured it would always be around.
And just because we touched on it before, I think when we come back for next week's episode, we will cover more Theros Beyond Death previews. I saw 10 more that got previewed yesterday. Somebody on my stream actually pointed that out to me, because the normal channels I checked did not show those, so I'm not sure how to treat those just yet. So I'm going to wait before we talk about those.
Yeah, good call.
But speaking of, did you pick up, get back on the horse, and knock out the rest of your YouTube challenge, or did you just bury that?
Yeah, I figure like it's clearly not, once you've missed 3 or 4 days, it's not 100 uploads in 100 days or even close to it.
Now, see, dog, but like, you went and got me all involved in this thing.
I didn't tell you to do it. I didn't say, hey, this is a thing you should do. You of your own free. I will say I gained, I want to say, 5 subscribers during the challenge. Numbers were trending upwards. I mean, I'm still trying to make sure I put out videos on a regular basis. It's just not necessarily every day.
Well, that's good. I mean, consistency does matter. I can actually say where today will be day 33, I believe is the count of my 60 days. So we're successfully past the halfway point.
There you go.
I've peaked out as high as 100 people on a show. No, that's not true. It was 98, I believe. On one of my streams.
Excellent.
We're getting about like somewhere between 45 and 60 that will show up through the stream and starting to average about 11 to 12 that'll hang out the whole time. So we're getting there. We're making some progress. We're making some good connections.
Was there anything special or different you did that day that you got 90, or is it just one of those things that happens?
Some of it is just some of the networking, right? I have a few people that come over with their raids. Matter of fact, Nessa Meow Meow came over and raided my channel 3 nights ago, I believe it is.
Awesome.
But I've noticed too, like when you're playing a deck and you're at Mythic, people want to come see what's going on. They want to see the new deck or how'd you get there. So that draws attention.
Absolutely a thing.
We did one night where we had the stream help rebuild my commander deck. That was a thing we did. Two nights ago, I let the stream build a deck that I was going to have to play. So that was a thing. So, I mean, I'm just doing different things to try to engage people and they seem to be responding to it. So it's cool. I'm totally all about it. And the one thing I will say too, there's something to be said about consistency. You know, even like you're saying, even though, you know, you're not doing the challenge anymore, putting stuff up regularly gets people to come back to the channel, gets people to engage. Another thing that people don't know, actually, here's something I learned is that especially on YouTube, particularly the way things are ranked and shown to people, generally the ones that put out content consistently get bumped up. So if you're putting stuff up once or twice a week, you're going to show up more often than somebody that puts up something once a month, unless that thing once a month is ridiculous. If they're getting
super viral.
Yeah. If they're getting 500,000 views plus every time they put something up, well, yeah, they're going to promote that. But for the average thing that's getting anywhere from 100 to, we'll say, 5,000 views, if you're only doing that once a month, well, technically, I mean, in all reality, YouTube doesn't really care. There's a bunch of people doing that. But if you're getting that every week, you're slowly going to build up, and then they're going to be sharing it to more people, and then you're going to get more people, and just like it starts to become a cycle.
Because you're going to keep people on the platform longer at that point, and that's what they want, is people to be on YouTube for most of their life, basically.
Yeah, it's all about numbers and advertising, right? Like, if you're doing the thing that's going to get more people to come back, they're going to get that notification saying, hey, this person you follow put up a new thing. You know, and that's the biggest thing I tell people. If you can get people to, at least on YouTube, subscribe, or on Twitch to follow you, I mean, you want them to give you the money as a subscription on Twitch, but even just getting that follow, like, I'm slowly seeing the numbers climb every couple of days, and it's because those people are coming back, and then one or two people have subscribed, and then you look and you're like, oh, I made 30 cents in ad revenue. And you know, it's a thing. Like I said, when it's all done, I really do want to do a like wrap up video on really like the engagement and what I've learned for, especially for Magic Twitch. Cause I think there's a lot of people that get on that just want to, like, I'm going to go play Mitgo, I'm going to play Arena, and people are going to come watch me. And it's like, man, there is so much more than that when everybody's just on there doing the same thing.
And I think people, you know, I tell people it's kind of like having a storefront. The more people you can get to come through the door, you know, if only 2 people come through the door, okay, yeah, you're out to sell something or not, great. If 200 people come through the door, 5 or 6 of them will buy something, you know.
That's half the battle, right? Figuring out how to get into your front door. But once they're there, you've got to be a salesman.
Yeah.
Like when I have people come through the channel and I see the numbers are fluctuating or whatever, because I don't know why. It could be some other people logged off and I bumped up to the 1st or 2nd row and people are coming in to see what's going on or whatever. So I immediately kind of change my candor a little bit and be like, hey, let me talk to all the new people coming in. Or, hey, this is what happens in our channel. Or you should meet some of my moderators that are here every night. Or it's awesome. Where are you guys from? Because I get these people from Australia or whatever. And just making it less about the game I'm playing for, even if it's just for 2 or 3 minutes, to kind of show people like, hey, I'm engaging these people and learning about them and talking to them and, you know, giving them opportunities to be part of what I'm doing. I'm even going to get a second camera set up just so I can do box openings and make that fun for people to watch, just because nobody else is doing that on Magic Twitch at all.
Oh, and I was streaming NBA 2K9 yesterday, and I had a troll come through, and he, you know, became a huge part of the show because people were, you know, like people started talking about how this guy isn't even funny. It's like, sir, do you troll often? Because you're terrible at it. And he became, you know, a part of the broadcast, and everybody was bagging on how terrible he was at being a troll. And of course, he eventually got mad and left. But I mean, he was a source of content for at least a half hour.
Oh man, that's real. For anybody who is hate listening to us right now, just want to let you know that even when we got done with that stream earlier today, that was one of the things we all talked about, was we got to expect trolls are going to come through. They don't even really bother us at this point. The only thing that's disappointing is you're not bringing anything new to the table. If you at least like write me a haiku that's insulting me,
yeah,
or some type of sonnet, or I don't know, maybe you give me a link that's got you like beatboxing to something while you insult me, at least I'd be entertained. Like if you're just going to come in with some bad joke that I've already heard for the 50th time, I don't care. And the people watching don't care. We just hit the ban button and get you out of there.
Yeah, I'm black. I've heard all the slurs at this point. I'm overweight. I've heard all of that before. So I've had my lineage questioned in every way, shape, and form imaginable. Give me some. I mean, I'm a comedian. If you make me laugh, hey, you know, we'll,
for real, we'll that's stick all. That's all minute. I'm asking for. Like, just entertain me, man. Hey, matter of fact, here's a weird one, actually, and I hope this is not insulting anybody because I could not find an answer and I don't know what it is, so I'm putting this out there and I'm apologizing up front. But somebody came onto my stream and they were like, oh, finally, a stream with a black visual because I'm tired of all these people with these Asian filters. And I'm like, what? Like, I even asked live because I'm like, what are you even talking about? He's like, well, I go to all these channels and people are using these Asian filters instead of actual like black people. And I'm like, I don't even know what this means. But like live, I have other people I'm engaging, so I didn't want to like make that the centerpiece. But like it's just weird stuff out there, man. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know what that is either. So yeah, enlighten us, please. If anybody knows what Asian filter?
Yeah, I don't, like, seriously, you can go back and watch my video. It's probably within the first hour from last night.
But I know there's a lot of weird things on Instagram, you know, or you can make yourself baby, you can make yourself old.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, like, I don't know. I tried to look. I looked at other Magic streams. I had no idea what they were talking about. And maybe it was an insult I just didn't get. I'm willing to accept that maybe it was like a high level, big brain insult that is just some weird part of the community that thinks it's funny and none of us got it. Like, that's also possible.
As the saying goes, if you have to explain the joke.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, hey, we
haven't had a guest in a couple episodes, so this is fun. This is a person, actually, we invited them over. They were introduced to us by other people on Twitter, actually, when I did the initial call out, and it kind of worked out this week. Everybody was free. We could actually have him on. He's a podcaster, and he's been in the Magic community for a little while, it looks like. So we're actually going to get to learn more about him. I am excited about this one. So for those of you who haven't met him, let's invite in Lawrence Harmon for this episode.
I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
Great. Actually, it's been a very busy day for me, but this is fantastic.
This Daquan's been on mic for like, I don't know, 20 hours or something.
By the end of the night, I will have clocked, I think, either 8 or 9 hours, depending on how you view it, of microphone time. So it's going to be a good long day.
It sounds like a reasonable amount of fun.
Oh, yeah, it is a lot of fun. So, yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of your background, where you came from, like how you got involved with the game. You know, let us know a little bit about you.
I'm Ohio-based. Most people know me for Legacy. That's kind of the primary format I play. I do branch out into other formats, but mostly centered around legacy. I got into magic in high school. I lived in a really small town called Yellow Springs, Ohio, and there is like nothing to do in the town. It's one of those areas where you can ride your bike from one end of the town to the other. You know most people. It's not uncommon for people to leave their houses unlocked, cars unlocked, etc. But again, it was like a weird, isolated place. Like the nearest towns are like 10-minute drives through cornfields, that sort of deal.
Oh man!
So, in terms of like stuff to do in town, there's like
it's a field of dreams.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice little place. But in terms of like stuff to do in town when you're in high school, it's like drugs or just kind of hang out with people. And we just happen to have a comic book shop in town that had, you know, various card games. And one of my high school friends played Magic, and that's how I ended up getting into the game. Yeah. So I ended up playing for a few years, stopping for a little while, and then eventually came back to it, you know, stumbled across, I think, SCG videos on YouTube, or it may have been Worlds in 2012, I think, and just ended up watching a bunch of random coverage and slowly got pulled back into the game, started playing EDH, and then that branched into Modern and Legacy and kind of just kept going from there.
You know, when you talk about, when a lot of people talk about Legacy being kind of hard to get into because it's expensive, like, I'm kind of curious what got you interested to make that leap into the format with all the, cause everybody said there's all these barriers to getting in. Kind of what got you started and how did you hop in?
So I've never actually owned a full deck. I've never had to. A lot of people look at Legacy and they go, oh my God, dual lands are expensive. But what they don't really think about is that there's a lot of people who play Legacy who just have 40 sets of dual lands. And the Eternal community is pretty liberal with loaning cards. Like there was one year at Eternal Weekend, I played against a guy. We had like a really cool match. I didn't hear, like, I think I friended him on Facebook and we didn't talk for a year. Then since his Divining Top got banned, and he messages me out of the blue and is just like, hey, sorry, your deck got banned. I own 6 sets of power and everything in Legacy. If you ever need to borrow something, I will ship you a deck. And then
nice.
Like the next year, I and some friends needed power for Eternal Weekend. So he like sent power with a friend across the country for me, someone he interacted with for an hour, and 2 people he didn't know to use. And I know multiple people with 40 sets of dual lands. But to bring the question back to the beginning, there is like a local community of Legacy players, or at least when I was getting back into Magic, there was a lot of them are dads and can't go out and play at this point. But my friend introduced me to them, hung out with them for a few hours, and then there was a Star City tournament nearby, and I just did a bat signal for a deck, and the guy was just like, I don't know you, but here's Shardless Bug, and that's kind of how things started off. So that's
a lot of trust.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. that's kind of just how things work in a lot of the Eternal communities. It's just like, hey, do you know this guy? Yeah, he seems okay. Here's 3K worth of cards.
Well, now kind of diving a little further, now that you know you're probably going to less events now, so you've stepped into the arena of podcasting, which is cool because, you know, seeing other people of color doing podcasting is always awesome. But how did you kind of get that started? What was your motivation there to kind of just take that leap?
So my co-host Steve is a good friend of mine, and we would talk on the phone a lot. I hate driving, so we'd chat during my commutes. So we were talking a bunch, and it would be about Magic, and often would, you know, swerve into other things, random other media, TV shows we were watching, movies, just us rambling about things, but mostly centralized around Magic. And a lot of it was, you know, pretty in-depth analysis of just like the format, cards, deck selections, just constantly going over these things. And one day we just decided, hey, we should just record these because maybe somebody would get some value out of it. And that's pretty much what our podcast is. It's the conversations we'd normally have, but mostly condensed to cut out a lot of the extra stuff. Like one day we ended up just kind of rambling. And then at the end of it all, we had been talking for 5 hours. So,
oh, geez.
Yeah. Yeah. We can just kind of keep going. Like there was like 2.5 hours worth of magic stuff. And then I think the other 2.5 hours was us talking about like Farscape and random sci-fi shows from the early 2000s, late 90s.
I'm down with this. I love this plan.
Unfortunately, the back half audio ended up being unusable, but yeah, that's just kind of how we are. We just start going and tend to have to like abruptly stop because it's like, hey, I need to take care of my kids or I need food.
Yeah, life is a real thing.
Yeah.
So how many episodes in are you guys?
We released episode 17 today. So
cool. Yeah. Cool. And are you guys getting any level of like engagement or feedback from your community via, you know, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or anything?
Yeah. So we get some feedback from Twitter. I'm kind of in the trenches when it comes to like the global legacy community per se, just from connections of like one thing leading to another, meeting a guy, ending up in like a Facebook group chat centered around miracles. And then next thing you know, you're in a group chat with a bunch of European dudes and it just kind of spreads from there. So we have a decent number of people who listen and will give us feedback on the cast or throw us topics or ask questions. And we kind of go off of that. We have a Discord server for our Patreons and those guys love talking about things and tossing us, you know, questions, suggestions. So it's pretty cool so far.
That's cool. I mean, I love to see positivity, you know, especially as we get people of color involved in more aspects of the magic community. I know there's always kind of a trepidation of just how welcoming is everything, but it's cool when you find those communities that really are accepting and kind of like, it's more about the material than it is the people even.
Yeah, exactly. I know there's a bit of a stigma surrounding legacy and vintage for elitism, and there was an issue with that for a period of time. But most of that is gone, and now it's just guys who want to play Magic. There's a constant discussion about the reserve list, right? And there are people who are just like, oh, getting rid of the reserve list would be terrible. But every diehard legacy player I know is just like, if they get rid of the reserve list and all of my beta dual lands are worth nothing after that, I won't care as long as there's more people getting into the format. So there's a bit of a narrative around that. And like when I owned dual lands for a period, I was of the same mindset. It was just like, I want to play Magic. I don't really care about the monetary value of these cards necessarily.
You bring up an interesting thing too that I wanted to touch on is, you know, part of the, I guess for lack of a better word, I'll call it gatekeeping, but not in the traditional sense, on legacy has been this kind of image of elitism. Like, when would you say that started to change where the players, or I guess the legacy community, started just caring about finding more players versus like keeping my high dollar cards or whatever valuable?
Probably when Star City stopped doing the 2-day individual format opens. Like during that period, there was just a lot of random guys who were playing legacy because it was a Star City relevant format. And you had a lot of younger guys who had a chip on their shoulder and they would do a lot more gatekeeping. That was primarily the bulk of it. And then once that stopped being as relevant, they kind of drifted into modern and other formats. And what was left over was just people who wanted to play the format. So it was just like a snake shedding its skin. It just kind of all fell away very quickly.
That's interesting. Yeah, I never really knew kind of because you're not the first I've heard that from, that there's been a little bit of a shift, and I haven't been able to go back and pinpoint when that actually started to happen, but that actually makes a lot of sense. It's very cool that you were able to kind of parse that together and figure out like what led to that. And I think the Legacy community is still important to the Magic ecosystem, right? It's another way to play with older cards. And in some ways, they're kind of like, you know, the keepers of history in some ways. When you go back and look at the different decks people are playing and cards that never get to see the light of day in any other formats are still active in Legacy. So that's always very cool to see. Yeah, another thing too I want to ask is like, how many quality Legacy podcasts out there are there? Because I don't know of very many.
There's a handful, but like there's a lot of like Legacy casts that have history, but they'll pop up and go away. Like one of the really good ones is the Brainstorm Show that Wilson Hunter did, and then he did that with one of the Braverman brothers and Paul. I'm really blanking out on the names. It was just a really in-depth kind of a brewing podcast, but also like they would just completely level the format. There was what was it, GP Columbus a few years ago. They rebuilt Miracles from the ground up, and Wilson and I want to say Philip, but one of them went 9-0 day one, one of them went 8-1, and then Wilson ended up top eighting. Like, he's one of the best deck builders in the format. There is,
it sounds like it.
There's Everyday Eternal, which I'm not sure when they started, but it was way back when. I think I was listening to them originally in 2014-ish, and then they went on a hiatus, and now they're back with a new lineup. I believe it's Bob Huang, Eric Landon, and Julian Knob. And, you know, that's kind of just how Legacy podcasts are. They come and go based on people's time commitments, and then sometimes you'll have one that makes a nice long deep run, but it's kind of just the guys who love the format doing what they can when they can.
Interesting. How consistent are you guys putting out episodes? Because I know I've listened to 3 or 4 of them, but I don't know if you guys are just doing them weekly or kind of on the same schedule whenever you can.
We do weekly unless something comes up. Sometimes last minute one of us won't be available or something will happen, but we generally try and do weekly, which can be interesting with Legacy because the format doesn't move super rapidly. So we have to sometimes try and figure out ways to keep that interesting, put constraints, you know, like when Ren and Six was legal, we soft banned discussion of the card so that every cast for that whole period wouldn't end up being just more or less the same thing over and over. And right now we have
it's like watching a glacier sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's about to be my next question. With it being Legacy specific, how do you determine what you want to cover each week? Because like for us, we kind of have general Magic news and then we have our POC topics and whatnot. But it's a lot more constrained when you're saying, okay, our focus has to be this format where things may not be changing regularly.
So right now the format is shifting or has been shifting way faster than it usually does. And both Steve and I have a pretty good track record of pegging where we think the format will head and metagaming in that regard. So we're able to kind of try and predict the future and talk about things in that regard, or just what we've been trying in terms of random cards or breaking down challenge results or what's happening in recent formats. So we can usually find a way to keep it interesting. And then, you know, there's always the fallback of just randomly talking about some theoretical concept as opposed to something more concrete. So I don't think we've done many episodes on theory, but I'm sure we will at some point.
Well, I'm going to tell all of our listeners then, if you're interested in Legacy, it sounds like you guys have the podcast to listen to. Especially if you're able to predict where the format's going. That's what you really want to know. That's the good stuff. We found out a little bit about you and a little bit about your podcast. Why don't we ask you 5 fire questions if you're up for it?
That's right.
Sure. Let's go.
Podcast spit hot like fire.
Our guests tend to be very sharp, but let's see how they respond when we put their feet to the fire in 5 fire questions. Okay, so the way this works is I get to ask you three questions that are more on the serious side, and then Brian, being the comedian, gets to ask you two more, we'll call them off-the-wall questions. So my first question is, what was the first Magic card that you actually found really interesting or fell in love with?
Chroma Angel of Wrath. This was actually 4 years before I played Magic. I was playing Yu-Gi-Oh! At the time, and I randomly bought an Inquest magazine, which was primarily Magic focused, but it had like a small section on Yu-Gi-Oh! So like I read the section on Yu-Gi-Oh! And then ended up just skimming through the Magic portion. It had like a lot of like random jokes that I didn't get because they were very Magic lore specific and other things. But there was like a random Achroma with Price and was just like talking about how awesome the card was. And I was like, oh, that looks cool. So it was just something that stuck in my mind. And then when I eventually started playing, I think my friend had an Achroma in one of his decks or something. I was like, I remember that thing. So yeah, that's the answer.
Yeah, that card was pretty devastating, I'm sure, when you're just learning the game. So my second question is, what is your favorite Magic event that you've ever participated in?
Oh, wow.
I know we're going deep sometimes.
That's why they're fire.
There was a year that Eternal Weekend was in Columbus, and that was a fun one because it was a pretty close drive. I did well that tournament. A bunch of my friends did well. So it was just a nice tournament overall. It was just a fun experience.
It's funny you mention Eternal Weekend because I think that is one of the things that is really superb for the Legacy and Vintage communities, that because there's very few just large prize events throughout the year, it seems like so many players target that weekend. Like they will schedule other things around going to that weekend to play. And I just find that so awesome about that part of the community.
Yeah, Eternal Weekend, it's less of a tournament that you go to play Magic, and it's more just to see all the guys you don't see that often. Like the tournament structure itself is kind of really grueling. Like the first year I played it, it was something like 10 rounds of 9 or 10 rounds of Vintage and then 10 or 11 rounds of Legacy, I think, something like that. Just a very,
ooh,
it may have been
just a little warm up.
Hold on. So it was 10 rounds of Legacy, 9 rounds of Vintage. There we go. So
slightly better.
And you know, the cut to top 8 is like one loss. That's like very thin margins of success. Gosh. So, you know, you're going and playing Magic, but it's mostly just to see the people or, you know, interact with the guys you've talked with in Twitch chat. And some of my European friends have flown in for Eternal Weekend. So you get to meet people who you wouldn't otherwise meet. So it's a nice event in that regard.
And then my final question for you is, and this one's going to be probably a little bit of a thinker, unless it just really stands out, but what would you say is your most uncomfortable moment being part of the Magic community?
Uncomfortable moment.
And that can be defined however you choose.
Sure. Like, Magic as a game is inherently a pretty white-dominated space. And in terms of, like, the treatment of people, you could almost put things in like a tier system, right? Like white males
for sure are
at the top of the pyramid, and then from there it's like white females below that, and then like it kind of keeps trickling down, and there's a general either distrust or overall ignoring of either players of color or foreign players. You know, South American players have been neglected in a lot of ways, and there's been narrative surrounding Italian and French players, and you know, the list goes on. So kind of just being within the Magic community can be uncomfortable within itself at times.
Fair. That's one of the reasons we're doing what we're doing. Like, so I totally get it. So yeah, Brian, why don't you hit him with your two questions?
All right. First one, and I had it written on my run sheet, and I've got 3 run sheets open here. Oh, here we go. Okay. What would you say is your favorite Christmas gift of all time?
So there was one year where we weren't doing well financially, and my grandmother was just like, hey, you get to pick one gift. and I decided on a box of cherry cordials, the like chocolate cherry, or the chocolates with like the cherry and cream center.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, that was just the gift I chose. I got it. And that is the most memorable Christmas gift I've had.
Man, that is a really just like...
There's a Hallmark special in there somewhere.
Yeah, that's like a wholesome answer. Like, that's not what I expected at all, but that is such a good answer.
Grandma's cherry cordials. I mean, that's like, it's a country song. It's a Hallmark special. It's some of everything. I love it.
Yeah, I also had a Ghanaian uncle who was very like education centered. So there was one year where I got a dictionary for Christmas.
That's different.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, value in education, so I get it.
Yeah. The holidays never really had too much of like a materialistic value to me, so I've generally gravitated towards the more thoughtful gifts as opposed to the ones that get used for a short period of time and then discarded.
That actually segues into my next question. Do you think regifting is okay if you know somebody that really would like the thing someone gave you? Ask you for a friend. Totally ask you for a friend.
I mean, if I gave someone something and they think it would be better suited elsewhere, I'd be fine with them regifting it. I don't particularly hold that much attachment to these things. I don't even really celebrate Christmas or any holiday at this point. So when I do buy people gifts, it's usually something that I know they'll like, and if they aren't as big on it, then I don't mind them passing it on. But, you know, I think everybody approaches that differently, you know? But for me,
I'm kind of in the same camp you are. I mean, if it's something you know somebody else can use and it's not as of as much value to you, then, like, great. At least the gift is still going to use instead of just sitting in a closet or something.
Exactly. Like,
I can tell you about this project then, because this is my aunt's never, ever in a million years gonna listen to this podcast. We gave her something last year, and my wife saw it literally sitting like under the footrest, unopened. So my plan is, I figure between now and the next time we see her to give her a Christmas gift, some kind of way, I'm gonna get a hold of it, give it to her again, see if she even remembers, because it had moved since she got it last Christmas.
Man, that's a tough one. That's a tough one, for real.
I'll let you know how it goes.
I think that's perfect. Just keep regifting the same item.
See how long we can get away with it.
Oh, definitely.
That business out of the way, since you're already here, why don't we invite you to sit down at our table and be part of our dinner table talk?
Sounds like a plan.
Cool. This week, our topic is kind of, I guess, humorously, we can say it's an oldie but a goodie. And this is kind of come up recently, obviously, with all the political stuff going on. There's been a lot of contentiousness happening on social media. And we've seen this a couple of times, and a couple of people mentioned it. So I figured I would bring it up here. But the phrase, "I don't see color," it's tough, because I think initially, and this is years ago, I think when I first heard the phrase, I feel like some people did say it in a well-meaning intention of just, look, I'm not one that cares about what color you are. But lately, I thought this phrase was kind of dead and buried, but here we are, it's in the 2019 and it's popping up again. So what do I know? But now it's kind of like people are using it defensively just to say like, oh, well, no, that doesn't matter to me. I don't see color. And it almost is coming off very negatively, and I don't think people even realize what they're saying
It's becoming the new, I'm not racist, but...
In a way, you know, because it's very disingenuous to a person of color to say that when... in a way, it kind of makes you sound silly. Because you can't tell me you don't see the thing that obviously makes me different from you, even at a distance. Like, so I don't know. Have you, either of you guys, encountered somebody giving you that phrase or coming at you with that in response to something?
Not recently. I think for a lot of people, they probably feel like dealing with, not necessarily minority issues, but dealing with the general topic surrounding them can feel like a minefield that they're navigating. So it's, the natural reaction is just to pull back, right? Like, I don't see color, just like everyone's good with me, but what it awkwardly ends up leading to is kind of a weird cultural erasure of, like, why do people call themselves African American? Why not just call themselves American without necessarily understanding, like, what, like, racial identity means to someone, right? I think there's a natural trend for people to see white folks, for lack of better terms, as the default or standard, and then everyone else is, like, the abnormality. And I think if you're in a position where you live your life as where everyone around you is white, and or at least the majority, and that is the norm, you're going to end up ignorant of cultures, and you're not going to really know how to approach these conversations. So I think it's very easy to go, all right, well, I don't really know anything about black people except what I've heard on TV, and apparently that's wrong, so I'm just going to pull as far back as possible, right? And I don't think I would necessarily fault someone for using this phrase, but it is somewhat aggravating when they double down on it.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Like, when you try to explain it to them and then they go further into the hole, it kind of be, as a matter of fact, I can actually, I don't know why, this, like, is a memory to just hit me. One of the first times I heard the phrase, somebody was sharing a picture and saying, like, oh, here's this person that's, like, the ideal all-American guy. And it was, like, you know, it's the image you expect. It was the white guy with, like, the blonde hair. And, you know, he's got his Letterman-style jacket or whatever, right? And I asked him, like, well, why is that the ideal? Like, you know, America has a bunch of other people, right? And you're like, oh, well, yeah, it doesn't really matter. I don't really see color. This is just, like, you know, the all-American person. And I was like, Let's rewind for a second. let's just talk about this, you know. And then they got kind of upset about it, and I was like, okay, we need to have a longer discussion because I don't think you understand what I'm getting at here. But yeah, Brian, what do you think about this phrase?
Because if you had posted a picture of, say, Denzel Washington and said, hey, this is the all-American guy, sure, there'd have been some feedback, you know. Like, hey, he doesn't look like me. What are you talking about?
Sure.
And we've talked about how, you know, people, so again, well-meaning, sometimes trying too hard. When I was a police reporter, you know, I could see people going above and beyond to try to, and we're from the South, you know, people, and there's still plenty of people of the older generation that will say things like, let's say, you know, colored, because they can't think of the term that's been used since then. You say, you know, especially when I'm trying to find somebody, you know, for purposes of talking to for my story, look, the story's due at 8 p.m. Just describe the person you saw in this accident as best you can. This is not what I need. I don't see color. If I need to talk to a white dude, tell me. If I need to go talk to a Hispanic woman, go tell me. But please tell me what this person looked like so I can attempt to find them.
So, for sure. Lawrence, you had something to chime in with there.
When it comes to these situations, you describe the all-American guy or, you know, what have you, people tend to just default to, like, cultural superiority. So you mentioned Denzel Washington. You know, there's someone who, when you say the all-American guy, they think of him. When you say the all-American guy, you know, someone from another culture may reflect that onto someone that they inherently relate to. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing as long as you communicate it. It's like, this is my ideal person. This is what I aspire to. And it doesn't mean that there's, like, an inherent negative aspect of that. In my opinion, I think it's totally fine as long as you aren't going, like, this is the pinnacle of humanity, right? You know, the guy with his Birkenstocks and, you know, Letterman jacket, whatever. Like, as long as you're not, this is the best that someone can aspire to, because it's all subjective and, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's where the difficulty in that discussion I was having came from. It was just kind of like, oh, well, hey, let's just acknowledge that there are other options. And then they kind of wanted to double down, but like, no, but this is the image. And it's like, well, maybe it's not for everybody.
You know, yeah, like, yeah. That
and that's where it gets tough.
Like I said, cultural superiority is just like a pointless social construct, and people love to default to it and struggle to take a step back and realize that it isn't true. But Brian,
another thing I'll say too.
I was just going to comment on Brian saying he was struggling with getting descriptions of people, and people would do, you know, mental gymnastics to try and not just say it was a black guy or what have you. And I think that's probably from a well-meaning place, and I think somewhat maybe just like an awkward paralysis, right? Like, if you think about the progression of terms that were acceptable for referring to black people, there are a few that weren't so great, and then you get to Negro, which is on my mother's birth certificate, and then it becomes African-American, and then that's like the accepted term, and it was very much pushed for years. And then I saw a thread earlier this year where someone's just like, don't call black people African-American, that's offensive. And it's just like, well, it's really not that big of a deal in my opinion, but
I didn't get that memo. It's offensive.
Yeah, now? This person wasn't black. They were.
Yeah. Okay, it's not a hill I'm willing to die on.
It's like,
and we're color of magic, though.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this person could be from Africa. This person could be Jamaican. It's like, yeah, you sure just call black people, but you also have to realize that there's been years of social programming that have told people to like not call black people. It's like, well, you could say maybe black man, but if you say the blacks, somebody's going to look at you weird. It's like, not. I understand people, you know, carefully curating their language to try and not offend someone. And I I think there should be a certain amount of tolerance and just like, hey, I understand where you're coming from. By the way, you can just say black. It's cool. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. There's a time and a place. When it's an actual descriptor, fine. Like, you have to tell me so I can help you. Like, and actually, I will say this too. One of the things, and I've had this is a separate conversation I had with somebody a couple of years ago, was that I kind of want you to acknowledge that we are different, so you can also understand situations that may be awkward or create some discomfort for one reason or another. Like, it, even as a person of color, like me acknowledging that one of my friends is Asian or one of my friends is Hispanic, like, I can better understand what situations are going to be comfortable or uncomfortable for them. I'm not just going, I mean, as much as we want to treat everybody equal, there are some things that are just going to resonate different with people. So acknowledging that is also a positive.
Yeah.
I think there's also,
and like, again, I want to encourage.
Oh no. What were you saying, Brian?
I was going to say, like, I again want to encourage everybody to, you know, listen to the podcast Daquan did earlier with the cookout. But if you really, quote unquote, don't see color, you won't realize when your company doesn't have any employees of color. and you won't understand how that happened if you don't see color. You need to see color to realize, hey, we've got serious gaps in our diversity.
Yeah, and that plays into, like, biases of education and even names. Like, my name is Lawrence Harmon, even though my father's Nigerian, I was born in Africa, my mom's been a Pan-Africanist for, you know, half of her life, because she was aware that there was a social stigma, and if, you know, she gave me a very African sounding name, it would make finding a job harder. And without fail, my current track record of, you know, applications is like filling out the application, showing up, there's a pause where they're like, oh, you're a black guy, and then they hear me speak, and then I can see them mentally fist pump because they're like, hey, we found our diversity hire, and then I get the job. It's,
we found one of the good ones.
I was gonna ask the next question was, how did they come by that name, kind of?
But you know, what you point out, I think we've mentioned it briefly before on the show in one of the earlier episodes, but I have done that very thing. I have used a nickname that my family has given me on some applications. And I even did once as an experiment, filled out the application to a, or the resume to a worse level than I would normally submit, put them both in, and one of them got a callback. And guess which one it was?
Gee, you know, not the, the Daquan one, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and you know, my last name, Watson, is very generic. Yeah. So, you know, and then the same thing, just like what Lawrence was talking about. I walk in and you kind of see a couple people give you like the side eye. Then you start talking and you can prove yourself. And they're kind of like, oh, all right, well, this dude's okay. You know, but I've talked to Asian people that have that same issue. You know, several of them I grew up with, they'll tell you, like, they, once you get to know them, they have their actual culturally specific, like, given name. But several of them just go by, like, Jimmy or James or whatever, because it's just easier for them to function in society, which is very sad.
Yeah. And one thing about biases is, within the recent years, there's been a lot of discussion of cultural appropriation, and the term has largely been used in a negative light, but I don't think the concept is inherently negative.
Sure.
Like, cultural appropriation becomes a problem when you have something like black women being vilified for having cornrows for years, or, you know, laws literally having to be passed so that black women can wear natural hairstyles, but then a Kardashian has braids and it's the new thing, it's acceptable. But I think this push of, hey, don't do that because that's from the other race, has led to a weird amount of segregation and has led to probably a larger degree of cultural ignorance than there should be at this point in time. And I think that there probably should be, not necessarily a push, but I think people should make more of an effort to respectfully engage in other cultures. Just like, you know, when you interact with other cultures and you learn customs, you get a better idea of what things mean to people and how people think. And that makes it easier to go forward from there. And right now there's a lot of cultural gatekeeping, which I understand why people do it. But I think it may not be having the effect that they want.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. You know, I was very fortunate that when I grew up, I had friends of several different nationalities. You know, and there were things I just kind of took for granted that, like, oh, I go to this person's house and they eat this food and they do these things. And, you know, I kind of learned some of the recipes over time, or I started to enjoy some of their music or whatever. And it wasn't until I got older that I was like, oh, this is a thing that bothers people. And it was interesting because generally, and I don't know if this is everybody, but several of the, I would say, I guess the Asians that I knew, they seemed really interested when they were happy when people took an interest in their culture, like wanted to understand their ceremonies and their dress and everything else. And they were going out of their way to like explain stuff and help you buy the appropriate things. And I was like, so, you know, as I got older, I'm like, why is this a problem when it's done correctly or it's done to learn or to educate yourself? Because you may genuinely like that thing.
Cultural appropriation as a term is only really used when applied to white people doing things, because people of color tend to heavily guard their cultures when it comes to white people due to, you know, history of conquering and imperialism. So it's more of a defense mechanism that people are utilizing, and it's probably perpetuating some issues. So like on one side, we have white people who haven't really interacted with other cultures and races and don't know how to respectfully do so. There's always like there's a line to be crossed, and they tend to just like unknowingly jump over it, right? Like there's a group called
Fair.
A tribe called Red, and they're like a native group that mixes like tribal chanting and drum work with electronica. And they had to issue a statement of like, hey, oh, wow, can you guys stop showing up in headdresses, please? Ooh, yeah. So it's like, we get that you don't mean ill, but please stop. like, take a minute to learn the history of these things. And, like, we're glad that you want to engage, but please do so respectfully. And I think...
It was Daniel Snyder, wasn't it? And the Washington Redskins. We've told them about that so many times, and they just won't stop.
No, that's a good point, though. I think there's also understanding, you know, and this is kind of the thing of, like, learn other cultures. Because, you know, maybe you do enjoy their music or their chanting and whatnot, and that's awesome. But also understand that the headdress is part of ritual and part of history, and it has different designations. So if you're just going out and just wearing that for the hell of it, then that becomes disrespectful to their culture and people who have earned it.
Yeah, definitely.
And they don't care that your ancestry said you were 0.1% Indian. Just FYI, doesn't help.
Yeah, I wonder if part of the issue is a lot of American Caucasian individuals just identify as exactly that. They identify as American, and there isn't a clearly defined American culture. You could say maybe in some areas like Christianity, right? But there isn't a set of rituals that are followed except for, like, you know, Memorial Day or 4th of July, right? But these are things that are openly shared with everyone, and everyone engages in them. So there isn't something distinctly for these groups to engage in that no one else naturally just does, or it hasn't been diffused through their culture. So when they interact with other cultures, they just assume that the same level of, like, diffusion and I'm struggling to find the terms, but, like, lack of reverence, I guess. It's like not understanding magnitude of how people address these things, because there isn't a corollary within their own backgrounds to reflect upon. So it's hard to really understand the scope of things. So, like, for you, it's just like, hey, there's baseball caps and there's cowboy hats and whatever, and everybody wears those, so why can't I put on this headdress? And it's just like people tend to respond very viscerally and often attack people instead of just going like, hey, here's what you're doing, here's why it's a problem, could you not, because X, Y, and Z. Be really, you know, it would mean a lot if you just respected these boundaries.
Yeah, and I think it's a little tough because I think we forget sometimes that the United States of America is only a couple hundred years old. Like, we haven't built up the 1,000 years of culture and history of what some of these other nations or ethnicities or whatever have generated, right? It's just not a thing that's there. And you kind of still have to be sensitive to that, that there's a lot that goes into a lot of other people's beliefs and rituals and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think the takeaway here is just be aware, be sensitive, you know, kind of just think about it for a second. And if somebody does bring something to you, you know, that says, hey, this is a problem or this is a concern, at least just hear them out for a second. I mean, sometimes what you do can be well-meaning, but if somebody, you know, and even as a guy, like I've had conversations with women where, you know, they've said like, hey, have you thought about, you know, this phrase or whatever? And I was like, oh man, I really hadn't given that much thought. And we talked about it for a couple minutes. I'm like, you know, maybe I shouldn't say that anymore. And just move on from it. It's not that hard. And
also on the flip side, I've noticed a trend of calling people out very aggressively. And then when they go, okay, I've done something wrong, could you explain, like, what I did wrong? There's been this wave of responses of just going like, it's not my job to educate you, and just like Google it. And I think that's probably the worst way to respond to these situations. Like, if someone has a prejudice or a, you know, misconceived notion, the 5 minutes you spend just explaining something to them will have a much larger impact on them as a human.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. Real talk. Like, if you're going to be mad enough or bothered enough that you're going to attack somebody for doing a thing, then you got to, I mean, you don't got to, but it only makes sense to give them that extra couple of minutes to at least explain or tell them where they can get the information to understand how they screwed up.
It's your,
because otherwise it's just like crazy aggression. Yeah,
I think it's your obligation to do so. If you care enough about a topic to call someone out, you should care enough about a topic to, like, carry it across the finish line. But if you're just screaming at someone, then that's just you misplacing your anger and using a deeper concept or something with a bit more gravitas as an outlet to do so. And you're just juxtaposing your own personal issues onto something bigger than you, which ultimately detracts from everything and makes things harder for everyone.
Yeah, and in some ways, I think you risk also pushing that person further away than getting them to be more of an ally and correct that behavior.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I've had interactions with friends where, you know, they accidentally say something racist, and it's just like, hey, that's not cool, here's why. And they're like, oh, my bad, didn't mean to. I'm a white guy who grew up in South Ohio. Like, it's like a thing that happens, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, man, I think this was a good discussion. I am glad we got to have you on the episode, got to know more about you. You are a very interesting person. I'm glad we got to have this talk.
Thanks for having me on.
So, yeah, Lawrence, why don't you tell everybody how they can find you on social media and your podcast and all that good stuff?
I'm on Twitter under my name, Lawrence Harmon. Lawrence spelled with a W, Harmon spelled via the common spelling. My podcast is the Thirst for Knowledge podcast. Run every platform, I believe. And then you can find us on Twitter at Thirst for Cast. But if you at me, I run the Twitter account. So just at me on my main account and we can take things from there.
Cool. Brian, how can they find you?
I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter.
And as usual, I am Power Dragon, PowerDragn. You can find me on most social platforms, and you can come hang out with me over on Twitch as we proceed to, by the time you listen to this, day 34 of our 60-day challenge. So yeah, that's it. On behalf of Lawrence and Brian, I want to say thank you to everybody. And whenever you're listening, wherever you're listening from, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.